Hello, and welcome to The Top Story, a podcast with headlines of the day from our correspondents around the world. I'm Tian Yu. Coming up in this edition, the National People's Congress, China's top legislature, has opened its annual session in Beijing, setting this year's economic growth target at around 5%. The South Korean government is considering reporting organizers of doctor strikes to the police for causing medical disruptions. And France has made history by becoming the first country to make abortion a constitutional right. We begin in Asia. The 14th National People's Congress, China's top legislature, has opened its second annual session in Beijing. Deputies at the Great Hall of the People are setting the tone for the country's development in the coming year. Chinese Premier Li Qiang delivered a government work report at the opening meeting. It says China targets economic growth of around 5% in 2024. The report also calls for accelerating the development of new quality productive forces and high-quality growth of the economy. Da Kaiyi reports.
China's political session is underway, with the National People's Congress beginning its annual session on Tuesday. During the opening, Premier Li Qiang delivered the government work report. He summarized the achievements of 2023, highlighting China's 5.2% GDP growth and over 6% increase in per capita disposable income. Additionally, he set targets for this year's development.
A comprehensive analysis and assessment shows that China's development environment this year will continue to feature both strategic opportunities and challenges, with favorable conditions outweighing unfavorable ones. The main targets for development this year are projected as follows. GDP growth of around 5%. Over 12 million new urban jobs. Surveyed urban unemployment rate of around 5.5%. CPI increase of around 3%.
Premier Li also highlighted the need to intensify macroeconomic regulation. He called for strengthening a proactive fiscal policy, focusing on enhancing quality and efficiency and reinforcing consistency in macro policies. He outlined several key tasks for this year, including accelerating the development of new quality productive forces, emphasizing industrial upgrading and high quality development.
Striving to modernize the industrial system and developing new quality productive forces at a faster pace. We should give full rein to the leading role of innovation. Spur industrial innovation by making innovations in science and technology, and press ahead with new industrialization so as to raise total factor productivity, steadily foster new growth drivers and strengths, and promote a new leap forward in the productive forces.
Another task is deepening reforms to stimulate business entities, including state-owned, private, and foreign enterprises. Additionally, he highlighted the need to accelerate the building of a unified national market and advance fiscal, financial, and taxation reforms. He further outlined measures China will take to attract foreign investment.
We will intensify efforts to attract foreign investment. All market access restrictions on foreign investment in manufacturing will be abolished, and market access restrictions in services sectors such as telecommunications and healthcare will be reduced.
2024 marks the 75th anniversary of the People's Republic of China. It's also a crucial year for Chinese leaders to achieve their 14th five-year plan. They're using their annual meeting to set the tone and priorities for what comes next on China's modernization journey.
That was Da Kaiyi on highlights from the Chinese Premier's government work report. Elsewhere in Asia, the South Korean government says it is considering reporting organizers of doctor strikes to the police for causing medical disruptions. The Interior Ministry says the government has secured evidence of about 7,000 trainee doctors ignoring a return-to-work order. This comes one day after the government said it will suspend the licenses of striking trainee doctors. Thousands of interns and resident doctors have been protesting for about 2 weeks against a government plan to increase medical school admissions. The protest has caused hundreds of cancelled surgeries and treatments in the country. Yu Suming has more from Seoul.
Well, in the second week after junior doctors left training hospitals, the South Korean government is initiating procedures to suspend the licenses of roughly 7,000 trainee doctors who have not yet returned to the hospital site. The government has issued an ultimatum on the 29th of last month, urging residents to return to hospitals. However, as of February 29th, only 565 medical doctors had returned to the medical field, accounting for a mere 6% of the 8,945 trainee doctors who had previously left their work sites. When the government issued a deadline, trainee doctors were warned that non-compliance could lead to punitive measures such as criminal penalties or license revocation. The health ministry reaffirmed this position.
정부의 업무 개시 명령을 위반하면
Non-compliance with the government's order will result in a mandatory 3-month license suspension. The suspension can hinder the completion of your major's training period, delaying specialist qualifications by over a year.
Park also warned that this administrative disposition may impact future job opportunities, emphasizing the measure's irreversible nature. The medical community, which took the streets on Sunday against a plan to increase medical school admissions, strongly criticized the government's approach.
The government blatantly disregarded the voices of doctors. Instead of seeking dialogue and compromise, they compelled doctors to take to the streets unnecessarily.
Prime Minister Han Duck-soo also recently implored residents to return to the patient's side, expressing regret that some are disregarding the nation's collective voice. The government is maintaining hardline stance, warning of punitive actions against junior doctors. Despite the government's stern warning, the majority of junior doctors are not showing any signs of returning to work sites. As a result, the so-called medical vacuum is likely to persist for an extended period of time.
That was Yoo Soo-ming bringing updates on the doctor strikes in South Korea. Turning to the Middle East, United Nations teams say they have found evidence that sexual violence was committed during Hamas's attack on Israel on October the 7th. Meanwhile, Palestinian security and medical sources report that dozens of Palestinians were killed and injured in Israeli attacks in the Gaza Strip overnight on Sunday. A top Hamas official says the Palestinian resistance will not yield to any deception or pressure as they join negotiations for a ceasefire. David Biller with the Associated Press reports from Jerusalem.
Israel says that a record number of trucks brought aid into Gaza, 277 to be precise. That would be, you know, triple the level every day in February. However, the UN Agency of Humanitarian Relief and Gaza's Border Crossing Authority dispute that number, saying it was really about half that. Whatever the number is, it's still a far cry from the roughly 500 aid trucks coming into Gaza each day before the war began. That has countries starting to conduct airdrops. Belgium's foreign ministry said it had dispatched a cargo plane to begin. This follows on the heels of the U.S. this weekend and other countries before, Jordan, France, Egypt, and others. Obviously, every bit of aid is welcome, but to put things in perspective, the U.S. dropped 38,000 meals, and just in Rafah alone, there's 1.4 million people. The U.S. held off on making these drops for months, we're told, because they're inefficient. You can't guarantee that the aid reaches the people who really need them instead of going to Hamas. And also, it doesn't replace the amount of aid that truck convoys can bring in. Aid agencies say that to reach the level that it was at before, they would need a ceasefire. The WHO's director shared information from a mission to visit two hospitals in Gaza. This was the first time the WHO got in since October. It was shortages of fuels, electricity outages. It was shortage of medical supplies, shortage of food, children starting to starve to death, hospital buildings destroyed, and he called for a ceasefire. Gaza's health ministry also shared figures, you know, revealing the scope of the damage to the healthcare system since the start of the war. 85 hospitals and medical centers out of service, 126 ambulances targeted, now inoperative, 155 health facilities destroyed, 269 healthcare professionals detained, and 364 of them killed. In Rafah on Saturday, we saw an airstrike on a tent area outside of a hospital that also killed a paramedic and a nurse. And the CEO of humanitarian group Project Hope said a nurse at one of its clinics had his family home bombed, killing him and seven family members, including a pregnant woman and a child. Israel says it does its best to avoid civilian harm and, you know, that any eventual deaths are the result of Hamas positioning its fighters, its tunnels, and its rocket launchers in dense residential areas. Be that as it may, it's obvious that the collateral damage to both the healthcare system and the people who work at these facilities has been significant.
That was David Biller reporting from Jerusalem. In Europe, France has made history by becoming the first country to make abortion a constitutional right. Lawmakers voted overwhelmingly in favor of an amendment which makes the procedure a guaranteed freedom. This comes 2 years after abortion rights were reversed in the U.S. Tony Waterman has more from Versailles Palace, where the historic vote took place.
This vote passed with an astounding majority. 780 lawmakers voted in favor, 72 against. So far exceeding the three-fifths majority needed to change France's constitution. With this vote, women in the country are now explicitly guaranteed access to abortion care, instead of that care being dependent on an interpretation of the French constitution. Interpretations, as we know, can change over time. In 2022, a conservative U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, reversing 50 years of abortion precedent, and millions of women now have no access to the procedure, even in extreme emergencies. Now, abortion has been legal in France since 1975, with roughly 230,000 terminations every single year. And France simply did not want to be vulnerable to such a regression, especially as the far right gains popularity with voters. But critics of French President Emmanuel Macron say this is nothing more than a political stunt, that abortion rights in the country have never been under threat, and that this is an easy victory for the president's Renaissance Party ahead of EU elections in June, where the far right is expected to gain a number of seats. An overwhelming majority of the French population supports abortion rights, but there are pockets of society that do not. And hundreds of anti-abortion demonstrators came here to the palace as the vote was taking place, some holding signs which read "Shame" and "I too was an embryo." Still, this is a historic moment. It is only the 25th amendment to France's founding document and the first since 2008. And many are hoping that while France may be the first to carve out a constitutional protection for abortion, that it will not be the last. This amendment will now be sent to Macron, and he said he's going to host a sealing ceremony this coming Friday to coincide with International Women's Day.
That was Tony Waterman reporting. Recapping today's headlines. The National People's Congress, China's top legislature, has opened its annual session in Beijing, setting this year's economic growth target at around 5%. The South Korean government is considering reporting organizers of doctor strikes to the police for causing medical disruptions. And France has made history by becoming the first country to make abortion a constitutional right. And that's it for this edition of The Top Story, a podcast that brings you world headlines every weekday. For more news in politics, business, sports, and culture, you can subscribe to The Beijing Hour, a one-hour podcast news magazine program. We welcome and appreciate all ratings and reviews. I'm Tian Yu. Thank you for listening.